Hello and welcome to today's episode. In this series, we've been talking about developing resilience, and we've had pharmacists talking about various different stages of their life when they've had to deal with difficult situations. Now, one time we know that is always quite challenging is at the start of a career, and particularly that first time when you're managing a team. Today's guest is Brenda Hackett, and she's going to share with us how she managed the early stages of her career, and particularly those times when she started managing teams and some of the skills and tips that she learned along the way. My name is Dr. Katrina Bradley, and this is The Resilient Pharmacist. So thank you, Brenda, for joining us. And the way we always start these podcasts is just by asking you to share a little bit about yourself, whatever you're happy to share in terms of your career to date in pharmacy.
Sure. My name is Brenda. I first developed an interest in pharmacy through working in a pharmacy not too far from home for a very nice gentleman, Brendan McSorley. And I spent time working in his pharmacy. I actually worked in his pharmacy in Tyrone and then across the border in Monaghan. So I developed an interest as a student, and when I came to fill out what was then the CAO form and UCAS, I decided that was what I wanted to do. So I ventured over to John Moores in Liverpool. I done my master's in pharmacy over there, and that was a thoroughly enjoyable experience. I wouldn't trade it for the world, because I came from a very rural area in Tyrone. Wasn't used to the mad way the world works. Went over to England, got my eyes opened, and it was great because it made me the person I was today. And I suppose it was great going over to Liverpool, because you didn't have the home comforts of coming home every weekend, so you had to kind of fend for yourself. And I don't have any regrets, met some really wonderful people. Came back, then done my pre-reg in a little pharmacy in Armagh, Paula Morgan's, and that was a lovely experience too. So I would have commuted every day with her up and down to Belfast, sat my exams, and then I decided that I wanted to come to Dublin to work. So I had already done some pharmacy work for some of the summers in what was then Unicare, which went on to be Doc Morris, which went on to be Lloyd's. And from there, I actually got my first job. So I would have worked for Unicare, which changed names, as I said. And I basically worked for 11 years in a pharmacy in Blackrock, which is now gone, in the Fiscati Shopping Centre. It was Lloyd's. And now I'm in hospital pharmacy, so I don't work too far from there now. I work in an outpatient department. So that's where I am at the minute, and I'm loving it.
And you're loving it. Yeah. Very good. So you've had a mixture of both community and hospital under your belt at this stage.
Yeah, I suppose the hospital end of it's a little bit different, that in that I'm in outpatient pharmacy. So it's kind of like a hybrid of hospital pharmacy and community pharmacy. So it's great to get to see all the clinical stuff without having to delve too much into the clinical side of things. But you get to see a little bit different than what you've typically seen in a community pharmacy.
And so one of the things, Brenda, that you identified when the group and the institute were thinking about different aspects of resilience, you identified the point at time of getting used to the workplace, and particularly to managerial positions and roles and responsibilities, as being the point at which you felt, you know, a certain amount of preparing yourself and having the right tools was essential. Do you want to tell us a little bit about your first time when you went into that sort of position and what you felt?
Okay, so my first time in management, believe it or not, is in my current job. So as I said, I had worked as a pharmacist for 11 years as part of a team. I didn't as such have any managerial role. I was a supervising pharmacist, so as far as that took me, maybe liaising with the technician or the OTC staff, general relationship there, but it wasn't management by any stretch of the imagination. And then I moved into working in management with my current team, and I suppose I hadn't experience of managing people, and it was getting that balance of, well, how do you exert some authority to sort of get the job done, but in a nice manner where you can get the best from people and make it an enjoyable experience to work with people. So I suppose that was all a learning curve, and I guess you have to work with people to ascertain their personalities and how to best, you know, get the best out of what they're doing in the workplace and how you can work around them and make it an enjoyable experience and get the work done as best you can. And yeah, it's every day is a learning day. I mean, I'm not an expert. I'm nowhere near an expert. But what I did find was I'd done the IPU Executive Diploma in Strategic Business Management. I'm glad I got that out because that's quite a long sentence. And, you know, even from speaking to the, I think it was 11 or 12 colleagues that were there, they were probably the most enjoyable days I've spent in pharmacy because you got to go out and meet these people on the ground that had similar experiences to you, that had stories to tell. You know, you don't have that in everyday pharmacy, unless you have a friend that you can ring up and bounce things off. It's normally clinical, mind you. It's not anything else. But it was great to meet these people, and they would tell you of their experiences of how they manage and how they work with people and what's happened in their pharmacy. And you've got, God almighty, that's mad. And, you know, that was brilliant. And I really look forward to those days to even have a conversation and go for lunch and go back to your lectures. And even the content in the lecture was invaluable. Like I think I spoke to you before about just the few things that I took away from it. And one of them was the five whys. So why is something happening? And this is the one thing that sticks with me. And it was kind of like the five whys. So you asked five whys as to why something's happened. So for example, this is a hypothetical thing. A member of your staff could ring and say, sorry, I'm going to be late for work. And you'd be like, well, why are you going to be late for work? I've missed the bus. And then you'd ask the question, well, why have you missed the bus? And they would say, well, you know, my child was late going to school. And then you could probe a bit more and you go, well, is this a normal occurrence? Is your child always late for going for school? And they might say, well, yes, they're having problems in school. And do you mind me asking why? And you know, the lecture sort of thing, it said it could boil down to, well, my child's been bullied. And straight away you're thinking, maybe if you didn't probe it down to that level, you'd be thinking, this person's late and why are they late? And this is frustrating me as a manager as to why this person's late. But actually, when I take the time to find out what the source of the problem is, you know, you have a better understanding and you have a better understanding of how to help your staff member and maybe, you know, prevent that from happening again and see if they need the extra support. And unless somebody comes to you and says, you know, I have a problem at home, this is why I'm late, you just take it off the bat that, you know, they're not bothered, you know, they're putting the work on everybody else and that's not acceptable as a manager. But mm-hmm. I think you just have to delve a bit deeper. Now, that's a hypothetical situation. That's yeah. one that was sort of presented by the lecturer, but I just took that away. And I always think when you go to these IPU courses and everything else, you take five things away from it. This is what I always tell my staff members. Remember five things that are valuable. You're not going to remember everything, you know, that yeah. you've learned. And that's what we'd have in work. We'd have a staff meeting. And if anybody's been to CBD or whatever, your top five. So what have you learned? And even if the people around you take away three things from the top five that you've given, well, isn't that something? Isn't that great?
What I love about it is that it resonates so much with what previous podcast guests have said about curiosity, being curious about why things are the way they are, including your own reaction to things. So yeah. that curiosity, I suppose, is exemplified by asking the whys.
Yeah.
Why are things the way they are? Yeah. And so have you used, I love the idea of the five things you'd bring back as well, but have you used the five whys in your practice? Like, do you find yourself using that every day?
Yeah, well, it can boil down to things like, why do we not have enough stock on the shelf? You know,
right.
And yeah. it can boil down to that sort of thing. And you can say, well, there's a shortage. And why is there a shortage? Okay, because it's Brexit. Okay, so what can we do to prevent this happening again? So that sort of thing. It's yeah. not maybe on a personal level, but it's on a work level all the time. And you might need to go to the five whys. I think they say to go to the end point where you get an answer and you can find a resolution. And it might necessarily take five questions as to why yeah. something's happening, but yeah, you can employ it all the time, most definitely.
Yeah. And can I ask you a question before we continue then? I'm really struck by how you described those days when you got out of the pharmacy, you were with colleagues, you were talking about the sorts of things that happened in practice. Have you maintained contact with any of those, or was it a point in time where you just had that collegiality and then, you know, you moved on, or you were all going back into roles, I suppose, where you felt quite isolated?
No, I have kept contact with at least five or six of the girls that I was on the course with. I think typically when you go over to England, you tend to resonate with all the Irish that are over there, and you do diversify, you do make other friends and everything else, but generally you do click better with them because the level of banter and crack is on the same level, I think. And yeah, we've maintained those relationships. We still meet up at least once a year, but unfortunately with COVID for the last year or two, we haven't. And then obviously people and families and babies get in, come get along busy. And like gets a bit busier. But yeah, we generally keep in contact. And I always think, you know, I have friends that I mightn't speak to for 3-4 weeks, but you could be on the phone for an hour to them. And it's, you know, everybody knows the score that if you haven't spoken to one of them, it's not that you don't want to speak to them, it's just the way life goes, and when you do pick up, and I think that's the same with everybody, really, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And with the IPU course then as well, once you'd graduated and you were, you know, in role and you met these colleagues, where I'm even struck by the fact that you found it great to get a lunch. You know, it's so interesting that we get so excited as pharmacists just to get some food.
It's mad, isn't it?
Yeah. Isn't it crazy? You know, was that then a network that you could pull on, or, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I wouldn't say the WhatsApp group is redundant by any stretch of the imagination. We'd still, you know, put things up. And yeah, if something comes along in pharmacy, like COVID happened, so we were all wondering how we'd navigate this and how we'd get supplies in and everything else. And everybody was bouncing suggestions. Oh, I've got this from this supplier and X, Y and Z. And if you need a lend of this, I can, you know, give you a lend of that or whatever. So it was great. And it's honestly great to have a group of people that you can still be in touch with, and there's not one of them. It spanned in age groups. I'd say I was median touching the older bracket of the age group that had done it. Yeah. But even the younger colleagues that I'd done it with, you know, they have so much insight into what's new and hip and social media and everything else that's going on.
I know,
in pharmacy.
Isn't it great? I get you know, tutorials from younger colleagues all the time, just saying, come on, tell me what's going on with, you know, the newest, hippest thing, or what is the story. And it does keep you connected, because it's very easy to get distanced from that as well as clinically, as well as in practice or whatever. What I love about you, Brenda, is that you always seem to, you know, that motto you said of every day is a learning day. You always seem to see the learning in everything. And I know you've spoken before about how you can learn from patients, from colleagues. You know, you seem to see that opportunity. Is that something that you'd feel is accurate in describing you?
Yeah, absolutely. Learning is not definitively done when you leave college. I mean, drugs evolve every day, every year. Students come along that have been to college and they've learned different things than you've learned, and you're like, God, what's that? What's that chromosome again? Or, you know, all this, you know, I have a student in at the minute and he'd be explaining drug interactions. And whilst you've learned that thing, all that information, when you work in community, you know the mode of action, but you don't know it down to deep down cellular level. And when somebody explains it to you again, it sort of reignites something in you, and you're like, God almighty, I did learn all that, you know, and piecing bits of the puzzle together, and then it starts to all make sense again on that cellular level. But I think when you're working in community, you lose touch a little bit with that because you're working on a different sort of level. And I definitely learn things all day, every day. And I think for somebody to say that they know it all in pharmacy, you will never know it all, even until your retirement. You're still learning. You're still learning from patients. I think a big thing when people approach you, and, you know, they might be having an off day or whatever, you have to understand that. You have to understand that behind a prescription, there's a lot more going on. There's maybe a diagnosis. There's maybe a new diagnosis. It's a lot for people to wrap their head around. So whilst they're handing over a piece of paper and, you know, they might be a bit impatient with you, or they, you know, and some people could class them as rude or whatever, I don't see that. I see it more that there's something more behind this, you know. This person's maybe got bad news, and we're the first port of call that they've come to with their prescription. So the least we can do, even if we don't have the drugs for them, is to find a pharmacy that does, to make life easier for them, to fax their prescription to a pharmacy that maybe has the stuff in stock. They could have been waiting all day in hospital, 10 hours maybe with very little to eat, and they're coming to you, they're exhausted, they're hungry, they just want to get home to their family. And even if we can't help them, send them to a pharmacy that can. And I think that goes for anything in life. You know, I always say to the people I work with, treat everybody like they're your family coming to you. What would you like? Would you like that done for your mother or your father? Of course you would. So that's what we're going to do for every patient that presents here. And we're not martyrs, or we're just trying to do the best we can. And it's great to come home from work and go, right, well, I give that a right crack today. I done whatever I could do for those people. And if that's helped them, that's brilliant.
That, it's a hugely compassionate view to be able to remember that. And what I hear in both is you have that compassion for both your staff members, your colleagues, as well as patients. You know, that example you have of understanding why somebody has had a difficulty and that curiosity. So it's a really lovely approach. Have you, just out of interest, have you encountered any of the difficulties that some of our community colleagues would talk about in terms of people being so frustrated with COVID, be it about being resistant to using masks or being cross about the whole scenarios? You know, have you come across that, and how have you managed it?
I suppose being in a hospital, it's a bit more managed in that we don't have as many visitors, but we do have outpatients coming to us that have been in the hospital all day, that are, as I alluded to, probably tired and hungry. Look, you can only do the rest of them. I suppose you have to just speak to them kindly, just make them acknowledge maybe that you have a few prescriptions in ahead of you, that you're going to do your very best to get them out on time. Is there anything we can do for you? Do you want to take a seat? You know, that's all you really can do.
It's like one of our previous podcasts, the guest was saying, do your best to be kind. And if you can't be kind, don't be unkind. You know,
that's exactly it. Yeah.
And how was it for you managing a team through that? Because not only were you dealing with patients, but, you know, I would imagine that your team needed support in some ways, or they were quite scared as well. How did you find leading a team through that over the last, say, year and a half?
Yeah, I suppose March 2020 came and it was the great unknown. Nobody knew if it was gonna, you know, impact people to the point of, well, if you got this, would you die? Or that was the harsh reality of it, I suppose. Or what way would it impact you, and how transmissible was it? I think when it all kicked off in Ireland, there was mass hysteria. I remember for the first, I was actually off the day the news broke. Not the news broke as such, but, you know, the supermarkets were actually thronged. People were getting their groceries, and
toilet paper wasn't to be had.
You were, I actually was in the supermarket myself going, what the hell will I actually buy? Because if the stuff's perishable, like, I'm not going to be out for another week or two. What the hell am I going to buy? You know, so you were kind of looking at everybody else's trolleys going, well, are they onto something that I'm not? And then I realised, God, you know, they're probably going to be mental in work. So I did ring work, and true enough, they were, and I said, shortlist, and I'll come down and give a hand. And at that point, went in and the place was 10 deep. And I suppose when you think about it, before that, we did have the normal people presenting with the coughs, and we passed no remarks on it because we probably just thought it was the normal cold. But then you were suddenly thinking, well, God, was that COVID, or what's the crack here, you know? And I suppose the hospital was very good, and they moved quite swiftly in bringing COVID protocol in. And then you were sort of managing the team and doing your best to sort of evade it as such. So we brought in protocols with the help of the team, and we had a team meeting, and we're kind of forward thinking in what we would do. And we had a sort of, for all the world, put up a hatch type screen to separate us. But again, we didn't know how it was going to roll out, because very shortly after that, then visitors, you know, they weren't permitted into the hospital. And the dynamic of our working environment changed very much, because we did have a profile where we would have visitors coming into the pharmacy, and suddenly that was shut off. And then the volume of outpatients might have decreased because, you know, the nature of COVID, maybe they weren't taking as many patients in and all this sort of thing. So we were managing that as well as managing the whole trying to stay safe and effectively not catch COVID ourselves.
Thinking more generally about, you know, your role as a leader and a manager, what are the sorts of tips you'd give to young pharmacists now who are thinking about getting into their first managerial positions? What would your recommendations be on how they prepare for that to make themselves, to be able to be resilient for what that will throw at them?
I think it's important to get to know your team, to get to know the personalities involved and how they work best and how, you know, you can communicate best with them. Like, I suppose your style of leadership depends on the manager's perception of people as well. It's a difficult one until you actually get to work with people, and it takes a bit of time. I don't think you can come in and rule with an iron fist. Nobody's going to appreciate that, especially a young pharmacist managing people that are older than them. There has to be respect, a massive amount of respect and an appreciation that they bring a lot to the table and there's a lot to be learned.
So respect for the expertise that's there within the team, is it?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, and harness that. And I think it's very valuable not to manage, but to let everybody in the team have their own say in how the business can best work and tease it out. Because for the best will in the world, you could sit down and put on paper what you think would work best for the business. But at the end of the day, with a collaborative input from all your team, you can come up with a better solution. And I find that time and time again, I might think in my head, God, that's a great idea, until I put it to the team and they're like, well, X, Y, and Z. And you're actually going, well, Jesus, I never thought of that, but that's actually a better way of doing things. So I think if you have, well, for me personally, if you have that approach, I think you can get the best out of the team. Because with heightened involvement, they're not going to be involved. They're going to lose interest. And I think it's very important to involve people at all levels.
Yeah, I can hear a very strong theme of communication between, you know, the things you were talking about in working with the team, having team meetings, but also care for your team, you know, ringing them when you were off just to see how they were doing, popping down to try and give them a handout, listening to what they're saying. Is that how they describe you as a leader? Do you know how they'd describe you as their leader?
I don't know how they describe me. I'd hope they'd describe me, first of all, as a manager that's approachable. A manager that works with their interests as well. A manager that gets the best out of them. A manager that's easy to speak to and to bring problems and solutions to. Like, that's always a good one. I always think, even when I'm coming to my manager, I always think, well, if I have a problem, I need to come with a solution as well, because no manager wants to hear a load of problems and no solutions. So, you know, they equally respect that and they go, well, you know, this is happening, so this is what I propose to do. And I'm like, problem solved.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
That's a lot of my job done. Yeah, I'd hope that they enjoy working with me. And that they would describe me as a good manager. I would hope that, yeah.
Are there any other particular tips or, you know, ideas that you have gathered over the years that you kind of would pass on to other people?
Like, one of the things that I brought in to work was, we have a list of jobs to do. Some of them mightn't be pleasant. Some of them might be jobs that nobody wants to do, but it's not very fair to ask the same people to do the same stuff all the time. So I'd throw it up on the board and, you know, we'd go, jobs, nice jobs, not so nice jobs. And we'd have maybe six of each and however many people's working, and go, right, you have to go and tick one nice job and one not so nice job. And everybody would go up and pick it. At least they have a level of going, right, well, I've picked what I've had to do. Brenda hasn't designated that job. I'm not stuck with that minging job again. And that's how we get through it. So at least if you've things that are on the back burner, on the long finger, and as I said, if you don't tackle them on a Monday or Tuesday and another week goes by, that's kind of a good way to go on a Monday morning. Here, listen, I hate to tell you, but all this has to be done. It's not great, but it has to be done. Who's up for it? And yeah, you'll generally find you'll get more done on a Monday.
It sounds like, you know, organisation, planning, communicating with the team, all, you know, working cohesively as a team. If you think back to your days in Liverpool and now to the Brenda of today, what would be the two or three biggest things you've learned as a manager?
Yeah, as I said, no day is written in stone. You could have an idea of coming into work and I'm going to do this, that and the other. But honestly, you cannot write the script on pharmacy. You could have really busy spells. You could have quiet spells. So I think you just need to work around that. Mm-hmm. As a manager, you're managing different personalities. Not one person is the same. No two people may get along. Working environment is very, very different. I'm fortunate that we do get along in the pharmacy I work in, and that makes my job a lot easier. But yeah, on a grander scale, like, there's always different personalities. You know, we all pick and choose our friends. But in work, we're foisted into this environment where we're working along with people, you know, that we might necessarily know or have the same values as, or whatever the case may be. But we have to work with those people for 8-9 hours. And it's very important to have a good rapport and a good relationship with them. And as I said, get the best out of them and know that you're an easy person to come and speak to. I think that's very important. And just as a manager, to, again, what I've sort of alluded to prioritise your own work. There's a lot of administrative work. There's a lot of paperwork associated with pharmacy. So not to get bogged down in it, but to have a strategy to get it done. And it's ever evolving. My God, you know, things have changed so much and they're going to change. I think Ireland is a little bit behind the UK.
You're being a little bit kind, I think, saying I'm
being a bit generous there, aren't I? Yeah, to be fair, I'm being a bit generous.
Frustrating coming back from the UK to see practice in Ireland?
Do you know what I find the most frustrating thing was? Generics were widely used. People didn't get a choice. It was, that's your atorvastatin, that's what you're getting. And I found it remarkable when I came to Ireland, the amount of proprietary use, the branded use, and that for the exchequer, for the government, you know, that this hadn't been looked into because this was a massive saving for the taxpayer as such. We've only just came around that way of thinking, and to people to now sort of appreciate that generics have a place in pharmacy and, you know, they're going to save money. We could be 8 or 9 years behind that curve. We really could, maybe more. That's what I found remarkable, and the people were willing to pay top dollar for these proprietary drugs when, you know, there were generics available at that stage, but it was just what they were used to and very, very, very slow to change, I suppose. And I suppose as a pharmacist, you nearly felt if the direction came from the doctor, the people were happy to oblige. But if you came along as a pharmacist, said, well, I have drug A and drug B and, you know, they're the same, it's going to be a little bit cheaper for you. You haven't actually started this medication yet, so you don't know what the difference is going to be like, so you can't compare it. And still to go for the proprietary, I just find that shocking because for the little bit of time that I did spend doing my dissertation in the hospital in England, it was all generic prescribing, no questions asked.
You know? And are there any other areas that you see differences between what maybe your class or peers are doing in the UK compared to here?
The prescribing, pharmacist prescribing, isn't that brilliant? Isn't that phenomenal? Isn't that a great use of our knowledge? You know, that's fantastic to think that we could be a part of a core team that would make a difference to patient at a very cellular level, like at the beginning, being able to prescribe. Isn't that brilliant?
Yeah.
I think we're a long way off that here.
So it must be very frustrating for you to see somebody who you trained equally and were in practice, and then just the environment being such that it utilizes those skills of pharmacists. And yeah, I don't know. I think here we're a long way off from prescribing potentially, but I think in general, yeah, I suppose practice is very much behind some other jurisdictions. But it's not that the pharmacists are any less able. It's just that I think
Absolutely
the workforce
not.
Hasn't been leveraged in quite the same way by the health system. So I would agree with your point that maybe there's been a slowness to consider how pharmacy could be best utilised. My fear is that the focus now is completely on the cost of the medicine rather than the appropriateness of the medicine for the patient, which is where the pharmacy comes in. So I suppose to me, you know, 2.5 billion per year being spent on medication, I don't know that we're matching that spend with the appropriate pharmacy support. And like I say, it's not because pharmacists aren't willing to do it, they are, but there isn't a strategy, a national strategy around how we utilise that workforce, which is a bit of a shame, but let's be positive and you know, hope that it is coming. But at the moment, it doesn't seem to be quite in the same place as it would be in some other countries. And you'll see that if you're talking to colleagues in different jurisdictions.
Yeah, I'm sure there are a lot different in America and Canada and even Australia. Australia is very forward thinking,
yeah, can be.
As well, but I suppose it's an affiliate with the UK, so it's kind of probably.
Well, Scotland
the
seems
line
to
there.
Be one of the real leaders in pharmaceutical care and embedding pharmacists in all aspects of wherever there's medicines, there's pharmacy. And I think that's where I'd love to see our policymakers doing a bit more of that here in Ireland. You know, really the message is wherever there's medicines, there need to be pharmacists to ensure that we can optimise the benefits and minimise the harms of their use.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we've all been to college, we've done the 4 years, we've done the pre-reg year, we've a master's degree, we've taken 5 years out of our life to acquire this knowledge, and why not use it to the best of its ability? Yeah, I definitely think a reshape and a rethink of how pharmacy and pharmacists work in Ireland is definitely on the cards. And the students of tomorrow, whilst, you know, I'm probably halfway through my career, I don't know what my retirement age will be by the time I finish, God only knows, it could be near 70.
Could be near 70,
more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh God, the thoughts of it. But the students that are coming through now, you know, they're going to be the future of pharmacy.
Yeah.
And they're brilliant. Like, I have a student in at the minute. He's absolutely phenomenal. If all pharmacists were going to be like him, you know, we're in for a massive treat in Ireland. And that's, things have to change for the better in Ireland. We are a lot behind the UK, but we don't have to mirror what the UK do. We're a country in our own right. And with the right people in charge and the right people with the right thinking, we can make a massive difference in Ireland in the coming years. But, you know, we have to look after our pharmacists first and foremost. Mm-hmm. I think down to a fundamental level, I would have said this to you before, Katrina, you know, pharmacists aren't getting lunch breaks.
Yeah.
So can we address that? Can we start by addressing that? Giving them the proper break, mental break, a break to have the proper food and to refuel and to be ready for the second half of the day, if that's possible.
Yeah. And how do you manage that in your pharmacy?
I'm very fortunate that I do get a lunch break.
Yeah. And how does that get managed though?
I have another pharmacist on duty. Okay. So I'm fortunate in that respect. And I suppose that was a game changer when I took the job. You know, I came from a pharmacy where for 11, 12 years, I didn't get a lunch break.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe done 12-hour shifts like you done back in the day when there was a massive shortage in 2007, 2008. To now work in a 9-hour day with a lunch break, and that's brilliant.
What difference has that made? Like how?
Oh my God, to even get outside, to have a walk around outside, to get a bit of fresh air, to get dinner in, you know, without being interrupted and, you know, ask questions, and it makes a massive thing. It just prepares you for the second half of the day, and you know, you are re-energized after it. I think you just, when you don't get a lunch break, there's just, the day goes on and you become lethargic, and maybe you haven't had an opportunity to eat because you're so busy. Maybe you haven't had an opportunity to even go to the toilet. Yeah. And that's what it boils down to sometimes.
Yeah. See,
they're very basic. And then we look at the students that are coming through now and, you know, they're paying massive, massive money. We didn't, well, I certainly didn't pay that sort of money when I was back doing my master's. But can we look for, at more value for them? You know, as a student, some of the institutions are not paying their students, and that's the way things are at the moment. Some institutions are, but can we get a sort of standardized level for them? If the institution's not paying them, you know, can we look at maybe getting their master's decreased in price a small bit, or what can we do to look after these people? Because as a pre-reg student myself, I was paid a nominal fee. Look, I paid for my rent, I paid for my food. That was great.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot to expect people to have to pay for a master's and then find the money to live for the year whilst they're working in a pharmacy. And I know that's not going to be solved today or tomorrow, but we do need to look after our future. They're the future pharmacists that are coming through, and we want to keep them in Ireland. We want to use their expertise. You know, we don't want them going abroad. We want to be able to utilise that for the future. So let's look after them properly.
And it sounds like that brings us nicely full circle to how you started out, saying that starts even just with your team, how you treat them, how you communicate, how you treat them with respect and work together. Is kind of a theme throughout this of how you maintain that resilience, you know, in your own professional practice, but also with the team around you.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very important to treat people, whether you're inside or outside of work, treat people as you'd like to be treated yourself. And I think you'll not go far wrong in life, really.
Wow, that's a lovely way. And it is that simple. You know, the simplicity of that, just treat people as you'd like to be treated. But at the same time, the challenge of that when you're in the working environment. But I think that's a really nice thought to finish on. Is there anything else you were hoping to share or anything that you wanted to say that we haven't covered?
No, I think that's it, Katrina. I think I've spoken up.
Well, thank you very much, because I think for people who are, you know, I remember the first time I was managing you know, a team, and it was a fairly significant team, and I was just thrown into it, and it was people around me being generous, but it was also the school of hard knocks. So
yes,
when you hear somebody sharing their experiences, I think it's just really useful, and it's a nice thing for young graduates to hear. So thank you for sharing those with us today.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening to The Resilient Pharmacist. If you like what you hear, please subscribe wherever you listened to this episode. And for more information, you can follow us on Twitter @ResilientPharm.